Excellent. Good morning, Hannah Brown. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Very well indeed. Good morning, Gabriella Peralta. How are you?
Morning. I'm very good, thank you.
And you've got the weather from your Gibraltarian perspective.
Okay, the weather in Lincoln is highs of 10 degrees centigrade, a low of 4 degrees centigrade, outbreaks of rain clearing with dry and sunny spells in the afternoon.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Exactly, and the moral of the story is don't be fazed when you call Gibraltar and you have an English answer phone response, because it's very peculiar. I thought, I must be in the wrong place. It's so rare you actually get a voicemail sort of thing. Can't get to the phone at present. Please leave a message. So there are two messages that have been left, because basically Gabriella, in her mansion that is Peralta Towers, looking over pretty much the entire Rock of Gibraltar, could not get to the phone.
I couldn't reach in time. Just couldn't get there.
So it's, well, what?
It's early morning, okay? I move more slow.
Yeah, you've got to warm yourself to the whole attitude. You basically build to the structure, and then life will sort of have its own reward. Worry not, though, Hannah was all set to step into the weather routine, and she'll do that, obviously, because she's well prepared and sorted. It's not that we're sort of saying, it's all right, Ben, you've done it now, we'll pass it on. It's just part and parcel of the whole thing. Anyway, Ben Lewis has arrived in the studio. He's just currently changing his costume and outfit. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
Very good. So last week we were talking about Frodo and his possibilities of maybe being a vampire, if I recall, actually.
Yes.
We were addressing all sorts of things. Is he still staying out of the light? Is he showing signs of consciousness? Or has he just basically saying, look, just leave my voicemail on, I'll get it from that point of view?
He's awake right now, follow me around the house, so he's actually, you know, conscious, so that's a change.
You see, this is clearly what happens when British summertime is about to kick in. Don't forget, this weekend, clocks go forward 1 hour. I've never actually felt so moved to actually wait until 2 a.m. in the morning and then move the time from 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. Have you ever felt that, Hannah? I mean,
I'm normally asleep at that time.
Exactly.
So I'd say no.
Yeah. So the moral, basically, you set the clock the hour forward the night before, and then you're kind of okay. Or do you just sort of wait?
Well, if I need to get up the next morning and be on time somewhere, then yes. Mm. But more often than not, I change it the next day when my mum messaged me to remind me that the clocks have changed.
That's true. Are you okay with that, Ben? I mean, you seem to be having challenges
with
chairs.
Just the chair's got a really funny back bit.
Okay. It's
not comfortable.
Next thing, he'll be asking for one colour M&Ms. Exactly. It's unbelievable. I mean, I remember when he was just a sort of, you know, I mean, he's debut on the whole production. Now it's a case of, he's got to have the right chair.
I've got the choice to be picky now.
Exactly.
Anyway, I've got the option.
God, so many things. But what about yourself and clocks? Swing forward, swing back.
Oh, I think... I'm usually asleep by then. But the worst bit is if you've got work the next morning and either you haven't remembered or it's just a bit of a scar in the morning. Mm. Well, smartphones do it automatically now, don't they?
Most technological devices have actually taken the stress out of the whole, oh, have we put the clocks forward, have we put them back, and so on. But share with us, Gabriella, what's the scenario in Gibraltar? Because you do the same thing, although at present in Gibraltar, it is 5.5 minutes past 9 a.m.
Yeah. I just let my smartphone do it. I haven't changed it in the past few years myself.
So you see, that's
the... You know, just so technologically advanced.
I was going to use exactly the same phrase, strangely enough. You know, clearly, technologically advanced Gibraltarians carry through to the whole system. Okay, on the programme today... Is that the barking of Frodo?
Yes, it is the barking of Frodo.
Unbelievable!
He's got an entire bowl of food in front of him. But he's barking at the bag of food because he wants the bag, not the bowl. He wants the entire bag of food.
This is a whole new welcome part of the whole programme.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, clearly summer is on its way. Frodo's up and barking.
He's awake now that it's actually sunny and not dark every morning.
Yeah.
But he's been very headstrong, and instead of having the entire bowl of food in front of his face, he'd rather have the entire kilo and a half pack. He's arguing for that. I'm not going to...
He's bigger than the stomach.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you know, there are sort of moments where you think, you know, I mean, Frodo, you're a pug, you're a nice pug, but really having the full bag, you'll just get sick. You know, that's the whole thing.
Well, he's got a nice, fresh bowl right in front of his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, obviously, he's clearly the canine equivalent in Gibraltar of Ben and his chairs in the studio at Sirene. That's
basically, he can afford to be picky. He can afford to be picky.
Well, maybe he's just been in hibernation, though. You know, obviously, if the sun has brought him out, if the sort of notion of the spring thing, that's the kind of thing. Frodo has finally emerged. He's been in a kind of...
sleep, bulk, repeat.
Or else... or else...
You get that on a T-shirt.
Exactly.
Exactly. Or else he's possibly sort of had, a fairly light time saving the world recently, and his whole sort of system. So now he's up, and he's obviously seeking nourishment. I suppose if he was the equivalent of the Flash and moving at super speed, then you could argue that he needed to have the full bag to actually replenish his energy that he'd lost whilst moving at super speed.
Yes.
Maybe. But I don't think...
But he sleeps 14 hours a day. He's just being fat.
Harsh but true.
He just loves food.
Gabriella.
He's now starting to eat from his bowl. He's given up the headstrong attitude and is eating from his bowl.
He's possibly heard us debating and discussing the whole thing, and he realises, look, there's a time to actually, you know, make a point, and there's a time to just settle down and accept the circumstances.
Yeah.
He'd be a lot happier. Julia Bradbury will be talking about how it's important to get out and about as the weather improves, and we'll be talking about Countryside Links actually next week on the programme, where Rosie Crust will be joining us from the Lincolnshire Showground and, of course, the Lincolnshire Event Centre. But, I mean, Hannah, do you find that it's sort of, you know, when you're sort of feeling maybe a little bit under the weather or whatever, or you're just like, oh, not more sort of assignments, a good walk can actually clear the mind?
It can do, in Lincoln especially, when I'm feeling down, if it is as long as it's a nice day outside, if I go for a walk, I like to go to the field that's filled with horses, just on the outskirts.
It's West Common.
What it's called. I didn't know what it's called. I just know it's the field filled with horses.
Well,
I love walking through them.
And strange enough, the field filled with horses sounds so much nicer than West Common, really.
It does, doesn't it? It really does.
It's a bit more descriptive.
Yeah. We could actually sort of suggest that to Lincoln City Council, maybe Lincoln Business Improvement Group, Lincoln Big, that changes it, the field filled with horses. You could actually change Brayford Pool to the area filled with academics.
Or swans.
Yeah. Or swans.
Yeah.
Swans and academics.
Or students who've given up.
Gazing into the
never give up, never surrender. That's the key thing from there. Richard Fitzwilliams will be joining us as well in a matter of moments. And, of course, Hannah, what's the situation with the 48-hour film challenge? Have you had any contacts as yet? I mean, having registered last week?
I have the email. Yes. I've just got to fully select which one we're entering
for.
I've had the email that we have an account.
We have an account. Now we need to fully select. I mean, I don't know if Ben will be brought on board as this. I mean, it's a very complex scenario.
Well, it's tough, you see. I mean, I'm being torn apart between everyone. You know, I'm so popular.
That's okay, because the structure that actually Holly has put in place together with Hannah for this effectively means that as long as you've got one of those mobile phone...
With
internet access, things will work out.
Fab.
Yeah.
Speak to my agent.
Okay. Do we have to get a certain type of chair?
Yep, you've got to get a certain type of chair. I need a certain cup of tea as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep, Beyonce, isn't it?
Exactly. Lincoln's Beyonce.
No, quite literally, Beyonce.
Yeah.
As you say, that's
exactly.
Could be a whole new phrase for the whole system. Okie dokie. As we mentioned, we'll also be speaking to Mark Whitlock and finding out about Health and World Health Day and Health in Africa and charities in Africa and so on. So that'll be packing out of the programme over the next 2 hours. Has Frodo consumed his food now? Because
he's eating it, finally. He's given up on the dream of having a kilo and a half of food, and he's gone for the much more normal bowl size.
The usual portions of things. I mean, it's
the usual.
Before too long, he'd be asking for happy meals and all sorts of other areas. This is not good.
Yeah. Well, he does want everything that I eat, so... but he doesn't get it.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, for instance, you know, if you happen to, you know, after Lent, as we approach Easter, if you happen to have a chocolate Easter egg, you could kill him, you know, if you gave him something. So, you know, we keep saying this, for goodness, if you have a canine, don't feed them human chocolate. It's, you know, there are chocolate treats you can get designed specially for canines if they're so inclined, although, you know, possibly you need to just work on various other aspects, but don't feed your dog human chocolate otherwise, of course.
Amongst other things, grapes. That's another one.
Well, yeah.
Not very late to Easter, but unless you have grapes for Easter instead, I don't really know. But
it could be a whole new world that we set in and establish, really, which is very good. And I got the feeling that actually, Gabriella, you're multitasking at present. You're kind of clearing things up as you're wandering around with the phone as well. Is this the case? So, or is it just a case of you've got sound effects?
Yeah, we're taking a cup of tea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's a way to work through that process.
Yeah, one-handedly making a cup of tea.
Yeah, another great dexterous skill, which could end in disaster if she's not if she doesn't have 100% total dexterity. Really, you know, otherwise the one-handed cup of tea, the boiling kettle, it could be carnage in Gibraltar. So I think before we actually go anywhere down that line, and the teacup sort of spills over Frodo starts yelping, runs for cover. Effectively, we do want to start that sort of thing going, because it would be a catalogue of disasters which would end up in the Gibraltar Chronicle, and we can't be doing that at all. Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella Peralta?
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your telephonic interview this morning?
Yes, I have, thank you.
And will you be joining again next week?
Yep, definitely.
Gather you were pretty close to the heart of the, well, unfortunate action yesterday.
Yes, just slightly.
Just explain for the benefit of Richard Fitzwilliams, who's also thankfully safe and sound in London. What exactly?
I was on South Bank yesterday when it all kicked off by London Eye. So I was only sort of around the corner as such with the intention of going onto the bridge and across. But thankfully it didn't happen to
and
me.
And the reason, of course, you're a midweek drivette.
It's
quite simple. It all connects together. That's the superhero.
Wasn't pleasant, no, by any means. It was absolutely. It was horrific.
Richard, good morning. Welcome to the production once again.
Good morning, and I have to say that, oh Lord, it was a long, long time since I had been to have Prime Minister's questions in Parliament. But I was there yesterday, and
you have perfect timing as ever, Richard.
Well,
you know, clearly,
I was thereafter. Lunch with a friend and made Westminster Tube probably minutes before the lockdown. So, I mean, they were there for 5 hours, whilst, of course, horror was occurring outside, as we know now. I mean, an absolutely ghastly tragedy. I mean, you never know what can affect when, and the extraordinary thing, of course, is that whereas the police can have, or very often have some success in halting attacks by multiple terrorists, a single person in a vehicle with a knife, what can one do? How can such an attack be stopped?
Well, just keep thinking positively, Richard, and all will work out, he says. And not
yes, that is the one thing that we absolutely must do.
Exactly. Good morning, Holly McGrattan, how are you?
Good morning, I'm well, thank you.
2016 French psychological thriller written and directed by Olivier Assayas. He's going to be the first in the dynamic duo of selections before we head to the last letter of the alphabet. I'll talk about it later, but personal shopper, I believe, Richard.
Olivier Assayas, directed Kristen Stewart in The Crowds of Sils Maria with Juliette Binoche, which was one of my favourite recent films out there. That was an absolutely brilliant one. And here, I mean, this is an audacious film. I mean, it is a very successful film. It's atmospheric, it's intriguing. And Sire shared the Best Director Award at Cannes with Christian Mungiu for Graduation, which we will be discussing shortly. It's a story with a ghost story with well, definitely a difference. It's set in Paris, and Kristen Stewart plays Maureen, and Maureen is working as a fashionista. She's a personal shopper for a star, Kyra, played by Nora von Wallstatten, who certainly hasn't got time to choose her own clothes, but she's also a medium. Her twin brother died, and she revisits their home. Whoever died first was on the other side, so how does she reach her brother? He'll send her a sign she believes, and it's a gripping story because is she being stalked by this ghost? Is he at peace? Can she be at peace until he has sent her a sign? And you are... And this is, as I say, it is an audacious movie because it won't work, probably won't work for everybody. But when you have a movie about psychics and powers and the supernatural, suddenly she finds she's being stalked with text messages. So what has happened to the star of whom she's working, whose clothes in a particularly eerie scene she tries on? It's almost as though she's questioning her own identity. And I have to say, this movie made me close my eyes more than once, because when you're wandering around a house and you believe that there's a presence there, it can be very spooky. And I find movies of this sort extremely spooky. But Kristen Stewart is absolutely marvelous. It's a superb, she's sexy, she's challenging in a movie which certainly does challenge you, because it's not just the doors that creak and certain noises you might be hearing, but what precisely is happening in her life. A movie that challenges you. It's one of the audacious movies I've seen recently, or of them. I think it's certainly one of the most challenging. And it works. At least for me, it works. I have to admit, for me, almost everything with Kristen Stewart does work. But it's directed with a great deal of skill.
Even her work in Twilight, Richard, does that work for you?
I have to say that Twilight, I saw one of them, and yes, it was what it was.
Just the one, Richard?
Just one, yes, just one, but this one hasn't got Robert Pattinson in it. We are about to meet him again very shortly.
Oh, steady on. But from the point of view of personal shopper, Ben, is it one that you sort of say yes?
I think I would. I mean, it reminds me vaguely of Ghost with Patrick Swayze in.
Is there a sequence where we have a potter's wheel and a soundtrack from the Everly Brothers in the background?
A bit Whoopi Goldberg.
This one, no, I don't think so. In fact, the music is it's extremely noticeable. It is a very bizarre film. The point is, does it work? Does it draw you into the extraordinary world of someone who's trying to contact a loved one who has passed on, but whom she believes is going to communicate with her? And the answer, in my view, is absolutely. It works very well. It's very skillfully done, and it does scare, and it does, I have to admit, use quite old techniques of open doors and strange noises. This has always been part of a sort of Hitchcockian aura in movies. You have techniques that have worked before. It doesn't mean that under a skilled director they won't work again. It does work.
Holly?
Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to seeing Kristen Stewart in a more serious role, I think you could say that.
More serious than Twilight.
Did you see The Clouds of Sils Maria?
I saw half of it, actually. Yeah, that's quite a good
half
one.
Half of it? Did you walk out?
I don't know,
I'm very disappointed. Because how could you have seen half?
Half?
I don't know. Honestly, there would be a good reason, don't worry.
Was it just too much for your console? Was it an extended lubricant? I don't know. It was just half of it. Never mind.
It's a wonderful film.
Hannah?
Well, I've seen this possibly. Whether I can make it all the way through, because I
might just see half a personal
shopper.
Not the shopper.
Yeah,
oh, shopper.
I'm not very good with scary movies. It doesn't take a lot for a movie to scare me. And
it's only a film, Hannah, don't worry.
I know that, but when I go to bed and it's dark, I forget the fact that the movie was just a movie.
Oh, don't watch this from bed. I mean, when the, you know, the odd noise...
You have difficulty getting into the cinema, let's face it, you know.
No, but all these movies, in my view, should be seen in cinema. However, I accept that, you know, with the streaming, and it's an art house movie, and Curzon cinemas are starting streaming their movies on release now. It's something that's happening. I can't fight it. It's part of a trend where people
let it go, Richard. It's like Netflix. It's there. It'll happen. It's an ongoing system.
It's happened in a large number of movies, but when it happens with the likes of Star Wars, I mean, we really, really got to worry, because although that does obviously have the draw which people recognise, the facts are that you're going to have trouble getting investors to invest in movies where they may not get a return if instant streaming, you know, you could, okay, you watch your movie at home, but what about the cachet you see go out to see a film, and up to the restaurant, cafe, now cinemas are becoming, they're becoming more receptive to that, but I mean, when it comes to theatre, opera, ballet, concerts,
it'll become an elitist form, and people will take going to the cinema with as much.
Yeah, but the argument is now basically you can download it on your iPad,
yeah.
I mean, and it's just going to lose you. Cut it halfway, somebody comes into the room. This argument, I fear, is not one that I'm going to win. And as I say, Curzon are doing this. It's very
are streaming.
These are art house movies, which, yes, you can see them at home, and yes, a large number of people have large television screens and large screens and can watch them, and yes, these are not vast epics, and they don't have to be seen on the big screen, but when you're in a darkened room and you're watching Personal Shopper, will it have more effect on you than at home when someone could phone your text?
You could be in a darkened room at home as well. You could actually just turn the lights off.
You could, in fact, ensure you were alone, but you can't always do that, and you know the problem.
Well, there are certain cinemas that actually are so small in terms of their screen size, you might as well be at home, but I won't mention them. Other than pointing out the question to, I think we kind of all said we'd go and see Personal Shopper. I'm still shocked that Richard hasn't chosen to actually go for the Power Rangers this week. You know, I really thought he'd be up for that. Let's hope he doesn't miss out on Ghost in the Shell next week. But if I said Ben H. Rider Haggard, would you have any idea in terms of who I was referring to?
No.
No? Holly?
No.
No? Hannah?
No, sorry.
Tremendous adventurer, author, King Solomon's Mines and so on. Possibly the ghost of H. Rider Haggard is being echoed by British explorer Colonel Percival Fawcett, who apparently disappeared whilst searching for a mysterious city in the Amazon in the 1920s.
You've mentioned, I'm afraid, what happens climactically. You're not supposed to know that.
I'm sorry. Have I got
it's just the official bio of IMDb.
Exactly.
The film builds up to a certain climax, which may or may not have been revealed. But, I will simply say about this movie that, yes, indeed, it does. And Fawcett is he's introduced as a sort of boy's own paper superhero, and he obviously was an absolutely remarkable figure, because family scandal meant merely a rank of major, but undecorated at the turn of the last century. His military career seemed a dead end, so he's asked by the Royal Geographical Society to participate in helping to solve a boundary dispute in Latin America, and it's there that he sees evidence of an ancient civilization that may well looks as if it is a very advanced civilization, not as his colleagues would claim in England, savage, far from it. And with him is Henry Costin, played by Robert Pattinson.
Yay, our Pats, go!
Indeed, yes. And what is interesting about this movie is that it is based on a true story. Fawcett is played by Charlie Hunnam as a form of superhero, and there is no question that he is remarkably intrepid. He has a wife, Nina, played by Sienna Miller, who wants to accompany him on his second mission, and there is, of course, with him on the second mission, James Murray, a noted explorer played by Angus McFadden, who's about as convincing a villain as somebody created from detritus, I have to say, because a corpulent figure, he couldn't possibly... Honestly, I mean, he is ridiculous. This is one of the problems of this movie. The story is fascinating. It is indeed true stories I've mentioned, and it also includes Fawcett's exploits at the Battle of the Somme. He gives a Henry V speech where he says, "King and country doesn't matter," and I can't quite see that, but also the action scenes there are very impressive. But he also consults a medium, and the medium tells him he loves the jungle. Now, since he's already been to the jungle twice, and searching, as it were, for this, he thinks it may well be El Dorado, the fabled city, the trouble with this movie is it's terribly cliched. What you need is a good script. What you need, you've got fabulous visuals, you've got a fascinating story. But if you keep changing locations, and if you can't handle, as this movie sometimes can't, extras convincingly, and if there's a silly villain in one stage of the movie, and also if it jumps around and it loses its drama, and that is its problem, because I was gripped by the first half hour. In the next hour, it started losing it, and by the time we had 2 hours and 20 minutes of it, and it had changed locations so many times that, frankly, I was starting to fade. It was that jungle, the Amazonian heat.
Were you going to leave it halfway through, Richard?
I would never do that. Reviewing a movie, you cannot do that.
Well, I don't know. I know one or two critics, but no, we won't say it. We won't
from that. No. We mustn't name it.
I'm never. But I'm confused insofar as, you know, is it the lost city of Z or the lost city of Z? Because clearly there could be a transatlantic challenge there in terms of, is it the lost city of Z or the lost city of Z? It's just
We invented the language. I'm sorry.
I'm afraid it becomes more a question of language, less a question of language. It's a question that by the end of this movie, quite honestly, I wasn't that concerned. Mm. I think that's a shame because this could really have been gripping. Certain scenes in it are wonderfully filmed. But I noticed even from the first action scene where they're ambushed on the river by tribesmen, the boat was pretty near the edge, near land, and you found the hostiles approaching, and then suddenly there's a cut and they've managed to escape, and there they are, going further downriver to do some charting.
But it's James Gray. He directed 12 Years a Slave. Surely he must know about not jumping around with locations to the detriment of the movie.
12 Years a Slave is a totally different movie, and the director of 12 Years a Slave was Steve McQueen.
Oh, right. Oh, fair enough.
I have to say that this had potential, and it really did, and it received some pretty favourable reviews, and it's got a very good cast, but, it's just that it loses its way. Something that's very easy to do in the jungle.
Somehow I feel, Hannah, that this is not going to enter the plus column in terms of your chart of Richard Fitzwilliam's views and so on.
I feel like it's a mix, a disappointed, so like a half face.
I would actually give it 2 stars out of 5 simply because, as I say, it had potential. It began so well. It's a fascinating tale, and no spoilers from me. Of course. Sorry, Alex. We really did have something with potential because it also makes some very obvious points. The wife is somebody who's a feminist who wants... There's a scene it's deliberately written in because since she's had no experience whatsoever of jungle, she could possibly have really seriously thought she'd accompany him. But it's written in for that purpose. You've got the bigoted Royal Geographical Society figures, believing that it's absolutely impossible there could be a civilization that could even remotely be comparable to our own at that time. And again, there are so many stock villains in this movie. I was most amused, however, by when Fawcett gives a speech to the society, and you have this sort of 50-50 divide. All he needs to do in attitudes to what he did or didn't see and find, he brings back some pottery. And suddenly a couple more seconds of dialogue and they're all applauding him. This is not a movie which has the realism it should have. It just jumps around to the extent... I don't know how many mediums there were.
Well,
in
maybe
the
it's like H. Rider Haggard and King Solomon's Mines.
Oh, no, give me Ursh. King Solomon's Mines had one glorious moment with Deborah Carr, Stuart Granger, as I remember, and Deborah Carr looks at part of the African bush and says, oh, it's just like the English countryside. Mm. I've never forgotten it. I've never forgotten Ursula Anderson, she, and that was... It was jolly good fun because you knew where you were. I mean, that was a bit of fantasy. Bits of this are very real. Bits of this are extremely well filmed, which is more's the pity, despite some fine battle scenes on the Somme.
And indeed, we've just confirmed that effectively it's from the Academy Award-winning producers of 12 Years a Slave. So it's not the directors, the producers that are actually responsible.
Yes, but they use... words of...
But isn't it nice to see that you talk about this trip for the Lost City of Z/Z and it's also produced by Amazon Prime and Amazon Studios. It's nice that, you know, it's got to be a plus factor for it, surely.
Anyway. Unfortunately, I found it lost its way, really, really lost its way. 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Lost in Z.
It's a very long time when it's so hot and humid, you know.
Much like Siren Studio sometimes on a Wednesday evening. But, Ben, your thoughts?
Based on Richard's review, probably not.
Really?
That's
the power of the Fitzwilliams
review. I think I'd still give it a watch. I still think I would.
Well, you're certainly going to see bits on television. The advertising for this movie is pretty imaginative. It's on the buses, it's on magazine covers, it's on the television. It's
not short of money, then.
Well, I have to say, I mean, there is a good deal to interest people because it's such an unusual tale. But they will find it very long. And as I say, if it was possible to have somehow condensed it all into a single trip, there are three, it would, I think, have been very different. But also you've got the seeds here of trouble when you're building up an individual character to be as literally out of some comic book, as though, as I say, a British superhero out of boy's own paper with a somewhat unusual climax. And Robert Pattinson, those who believe that they would like to see him, and Sienna Miller, appearing...
Well, let's face it, she
has... Tom Holland as his son, this is the thing, he goes back... It's impossible to have a challenge that Fawcett doesn't rise to. As a result, he's perfectly capable of being persuaded by his son to go back after...
He points his Percy in the right direction, that's the important thing, that's what the director does. So it's wonderful stuff there, and I'm sure, Holly, would you be tempted to go to see The Lost City of Z?
Yeah, I think in terms of the production value, you can tell a lot of money has gone into it, so I think it will look... very appealing and entice you in visually, but maybe the story.
And admittedly, it won't be a Power Rangers, but at the same time.
No, it won't, but maybe Power Rangers inspired by that.
Could well be. Nice
historical story. I was looking forward to it, but I found that when I came out,
I can sense your disappointment across the airways, Richard. I can see it. It's palpable, you know. Hannah, would you ignore it? I mean, I think it's more and more seething into the sort of the negative.
Face.
Yeah, unhappy face. But what about yourself? Would you go?
I might give it a watch. Probably not in the...
Watch half of it?
I try and watch all of the film, because otherwise I'll spend my life wondering how it ended, as I have done of a previous film.
I'm afraid you might have been told already how it ended.
Oh, come now. You can always listen to the podcast again, or indeed, as Ben rightly sort of said, just simply go to the IMDb and it's the first line.
Exactly.
There,
so. Save you, like, £7 anyway.
Exactly.
This is one of the reasons why, not only why I avoid trailers, you don't normally get spoilers in trailers, but... online, pretty well everywhere you look, there are dangers. And, I mean, I don't think this would put people off to know, but I do think that a movie of the sort, especially when you've got the Amazonian jungle, you've got to be drawn into the story. And if you have no less than three visits, and then they've got to be cutbacks that you get instantly back to England, and then you return, and there's the war, you have to handle it in a way which is going to grip. And this has a very slack grip. It isn't anything like as dramatic as it should be.
The point has been made. Holly, last two questions, please.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, two very contrasting movies.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I sincerely hope so.
I hope that wasn't a spoiler, the fact that Richard Fitzwilliams will return. No, I think we're okay.